Final show will be on air in a moment. Fee Glover and Julia Hartley Brewer are two of the guests this week. Then it's Fallon and Harrison's wedding day in the Arches. First, do you dare dive into next week's book at bedtime?
The tail waved once left, once right.
A shark or a whale or something.
Now it turned.
People react to them with their guts.
Black eyes.
Sharks are like axe murderers.
Staring at him.
Man-eater. The mouth open.
He suddenly screamed.
And with a final sweep.
God damn your black soul.
The sickle tail, it struck.
Jaws by Peter Benchley. BBC Radio 4's Book at Bedtime. Starting next Monday night at 10:45.
How do people with dwarfism, how have they been represented in arts and in culture? Front Row is at 7:15. Now time for Joe Bunting with Where's the Effin' News?
Hello, I'm Joe Bunting and this is a show which features women's voices and opinions. Now, hopefully this won't happen, but just to let you know that if during the course of the programme I say something crass about women that causes offence, rest assured I will immediately come round offering you all mugs of tea so that you're completely charmed and forget whatever it was I said. Welcome to Where's the F in News. So that's the Boris Johnson story. Tick, done that. Another story this week involved photographs of Jeremy Corbyn in 2014 attending a memorial service in Tunisia, including for members of Black September, the group behind the attack on Israeli athletes at the 1972 Olympic Games. Jeremy Corbyn was asked if he'd laid a wreath at the service.
I was present when it was laid. I don't think I was actually involved in it.
So, again, if I do or say anything during the show that you find unacceptable, can I just say that although I'm present here at the show, I'm not actually involved in it. So time to introduce my guests this week. Please welcome voice of Radio 4's The Listening Project, Fee Glover, writer and comedian Katie Mulgrew, performance artist Bryony Kimmings, and talk radio's Julia Hartley Brewer. And now, anyone here been present at an event that you weren't actually involved in? It doesn't have to involve terrorists. Bryony.
I think long-term relationship sex. You sort of hone this ability to, like, switch off your brain but not your face. I've perfected it. I'm doing it now.
Do you know what I found so weird about this? Just the way that he says he was present, doesn't it? So he's like the spooky child at the back of the class when teacher's taking the register and everyone else goes, yes, sir, or, you know, I'm here, and just this voice goes, present. There's just something odd about it.
Yes.
Like, most people just say, people. I was there, don't they? I was there.
It might have been better for him if he had just said that, I think, probably. Katie, have you ever been present but not involved?
Probably the birth of my son.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I was on shift, but, like, then I'd clocked out a bit early. I was so out of it that my husband said that he handed me my son, and I sort of said to the obstetrician, like, oh, thanks, mate, cheers. Like, as if, like, she just tarmacked our drive or something, like... She did a real
sit. No, I can top that. I was so out of my head that after a 74-hour labour, yes, count them, full 74 hours, they said, it's a girl. And I said, a girl what?
A woman in the news this week that I have a lot of sympathy for is 26-year-old Sue Ayhan, a contestant on the Turkish version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. She sadly missed out on the £1 million prize when she failed to correctly answer her fourth question, where would you find... the Great Wall of China. Faced with the choices South Korea, India, Japan, or China, Sue opted to ask the audience. Hoping for a clear majority in favour of one of the options, Sue was disappointed when the percentage of the audience going for China was just 51%. So I just wondered what you lot were like when it came to quizzes. I suspect at least a couple of you are frighteningly competitive. Not connected at all, but I am going to start with you, Julia. Do you like a quiz?
I love a quiz. My husband and I love the PTA quiz night. And my daughter's done 6 years at school. We've won half. All those quiz nights, we've won half of them on our table. But it's all about getting in the best other parents. So we spend months beforehand sort of getting parents in. We're very competitive. I think the year that one of the members of our team did a victory lap around the sports hall, we may have pushed it too far.
Fee, what are you like?
So I am a dreadful component of any team because I think I'm right about absolutely blooming everything. But I'm most of the time extremely wrong. Because I'm short and stroppy, I think people just give up and go, yeah, OK.
Once
when I was on University Challenge, I identified quite a well-known Bob Dylan track as being by Leona Lewis.
So, moving on, Marks and Spencer's closed 7 of its stores on Saturday. House of Fraser nearly went into administration but has been rescued by Sports Direct founder Mike Ashley, though it's not clear how many of its 59 stores will stay open. Whenever we hear about high street shopping and versus online delivered to your door shopping, we hear how the shops need to compete by offering great customer service and great experiences. John Lewis has come up with a novel idea, according to a retail expert on the Today programme.
People like John Lewis have even been doing theatre training for their staff so that when you get there, you know, you have a really good interaction with them.
That sounds grim, doesn't it? Bryony, you've got lots of theatrical experience. I would like to hear your take on the John Lewis approach to customer service, that they're going to give them theatrical training.
Man, I can imagine it in that room so much. It's just like being at drama school. Cue breathing exercises, trust exercises, like lots of falling into arms. Oh, God, I'm having an anxiety attack. All the people that are in the customer service department will pretend that they are items for sale. So, like, they'll pretend that they're, like, a chenille jumper, or they'll pretend that they're, like, a framed Jack Vetriano print. Then they'll learn how to fight. That's important in any kind of drama school training. How to project. How to cry on cue. That's important if someone isn't buying something, isn't it? To just start crying immediately. Please don't buy it on Amazon. Please buy it here. And then sort of by the time it's over, that training, I think customers will walk into any John Lewis and find no staff at all whatsoever because they'll either be crying in their dressing rooms or they'll be watching Terry, the head of haberdashery, doing her one-woman condensed Shakespeare in a tent fashioned from Kath Kidson wallpaper rolls. It is the worst idea.
Thank you, Brian. That was great.
Well, I'm worried as well about the John Lewis thing, and I'm with you. So quite often I go to John Lewis as a place of sanctuary. When I was pregnant, I often went there to just wander around, safe in the knowledge that somebody would be a trained midwife in haberdashery, and it would all be okay. Just leave me alone. Leave me alone. I'm not going to want to buy your products because you come over and ask me my name.
Do you think
how
people exist who do want that? Who do want people to come and say, shall I help
yes,
you choose that?
They're in America. And that's lovely.
Hi, I'm Brett. I'll be your server today.
Exactly.
Sod off, Brett.
Serve so
Can I help you? Well, yeah, actually, here's the shopping list. While I'm here, would you mind going off and getting in the queue at Clark's for the start of school year shoes while I finish here? Oh, you're not going to do that? Well, then what were you offering? Are you helping me? I don't think you are helping me at this point.
I was fired from my first 5 jobs in retail.
Why?
I got annoyed with a woman who I was like, oh, those shoes look great in you. And she went, you just want me to buy them. And I went, I don't care if you buy them or not. I got really northern on her.
If I were in a changing room and you said that to me, I'd love you for that. I'd love the honesty.
Another story I read about customer service left me with mixed feelings. I thought this was a lovely idea, but I never, ever want to be involved in it. I want to be present, but not involved. What am I referring to? It's the new concept being rolled out by the Costa coffee chain of a chatter and natter table. So basically, you can choose to sit at that table, and the idea is that you you know, you are therefore signalling that you would be happy to chat to other people who would come and join you. Do you think that's a good idea?
No.
No. What, I'll tell you what gets me about it is that chatter and natter mean the same thing. So that's annoying.
And a talk table.
It's a talk table.
And then have a talk.
I think it's a lovely idea. Loneliness, especially in cities, is a massive problem. And sometimes you do need to be given permission to start a conversation with somebody. And there's loads of conversations you can start in a coffee shop. How expensive is this coffee? What type of cranky milk have you got? Etc., etc. Before moving on to Brexit, obviously.
The cynic in me says that it's a brand and probably to do with the fact they don't want one person sitting at two people tables.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that.
Soz about it.
Bucking the downward retail trend is the sale of one product in particular. News emerged this week that sausage sales are up, hurrah, by 4.4 million packs a year, which is quite a lot. One of the reasons given is that there is now a wider range of healthier artisan sausages available. Julia, are you a fan of a posh sausage?
You are. When it comes to sausages, I'm rather a fan of the sort of hoof and eyelid variety. The sort of, they scraped it off the floor and put it in the blender again,
fatty,
put some colouring in it, bit of bread, bit of fat. They're the ones that actually taste the best. And you can put a bit of brambly apple in it and pretend it's from a deer, not a horse or whatever it is, and you can pretend it tastes better, but you know in your heart of hearts what you really want. I have to say, I really think that you should just keep some things the way God intended them to be. Really, really unhealthy and causing cancer.
How I feel about artisan food is like a metaphor for my ambiguous kind of class problem. Like, part of me wants like Himalayan sea salt, cardamom, rose petal chocolate. Like the middle class part of me. And then the working class part of me just wants a topic.
But I don't understand why sausage sales have gone up since they're supposed to be so bad for us. Didn't we basically hear that every single sausage you eat takes, you know, a month off your life or something?
Well, the healthy sausages have gone up. Although, I'll tell you another reason why a sausage specialist thinks the sales have gone up.
There is such a thing.
He doesn't.
Don't talk about Ronnie that way.
He does not call himself that. Matt Heap runs two sausage cafes in London. He told The Times that he thought the British sausage was a reassuring, familiar sight. I thought I would try and find the perfect sausage for someone, depending on how they feel about these uncertain Brexity times. Can't wait to get your blue passport. Looking forward to returning to a time when Britain was great and we brought in the harvest using two shire horses and an old wooden cart. The sausage for you is the M&S Old English Farmhouse Sausage. Old with an E, English Farmhouse Sausage. Four words that reassure you that we really have taken back control of our porkers. Are you a rabid Remainer who loves all things European? For you, it's got to be Aldi's Italian-style chicken, mozzarella, sun-dried tomato and basil chipolatas. Yes, they do sound a bit revolting, but let's face it, Paris has just introduced open-air urinals, so Europe can be like that. For the person who voted Remain because they vaguely think staying in Europe's a good idea but don't really know much about it, the Sainsbury's Toulouse-inspired pork sausage should be your choice, because it sounds appealing, and yet, what actually is it? You don't care, it says Toulouse in the description, and that's good enough for you. Waitrose offers a very special venison and pork sausage with thyme, citrus and port. But to be avoided, if the word port no longer makes you think of a fortified wine, but conjures up images of Dover and the massive tailbacks are going to be when border checks come in. Finally, if you've reached a point where you just think the whole Brexit situation now makes absolutely no sense whatsoever, then it's got to be Asda's cheddar and onion chutney sausage. Because when was a cheese and onion sausage anything but utter madness? Right.
There was some really exciting news this week, and it wasn't that Faye Tozer from Steps is going to be on Strictly, although clearly that is mind-blowing. It was the news that NASA has successfully launched a probe that will almost, in space terms, touch the sun. The Parker Solar Probe will be the fastest moving man-made object ever, and its protective front heat shield will have to withstand temperatures of up to 1,300 degrees Celsius. So to put that into perspective, it's almost as hot as it was in conservatories across Britain during the heat wave. Are you all excited by this new space adventure?
I'm excited for other people to be able to go and do it, but the idea that I would ever indulge in space exploration myself... I couldn't take a job at the BBC in Salford because the Virgin Pendolino train just makes me upchuck. I had to ask my boss to come and pick me up from the station once because I couldn't walk properly.
I mean, it sort of annoys me, though, that, like, scientists have figured out to get a probe... that the heat of the sun, like, they can figure out how to get it and it doesn't melt, and that's amazing, yet no scientist has been able to figure out how to make an oven. Like, you know, when you put oven chips in, like, that they bake them all evenly. Like, the same temperature, and they don't burn around. Thank you for the one person that was trying to slow clap that and nobody did.
The aim of the mission is to understand the behaviour of the sun, and in particular solar winds. One of the scientists involved in the project is UK-born Dr. Nikki Fox.
In 1859, there was this huge event called the Carrington Event, and it was actually the first time that people realised, wow, the sun did something and the Earth is feeling a change. Now, in 1859, you know, the telegraph system went down, and it went down for 4 days, which was very inconvenient. But try telling your children that the internet is going to go down for 4+ days, and national panic will ensue.
That would be a disaster, though, wouldn't it? Imagine if we did lose the internet for 4 days, or even less than that.
I think that I'd probably lose it. I literally lose it if someone hasn't two-ticked on WhatsApp. Like, I can't bear it. I literally can sit there and watch and be like, why isn't it two-ticked? Why isn't it two-ticked? Two-tick! And I'll call them and be like, why haven't you two-ticked? Don't know what that means. That means you've read a message.
Yeah.
OK, good. Just check in.
No, I mean, I didn't, though, but I'm pretending. Is it true that you've spent 7 days in a controlled environment in a constant state of intoxication?
No. Yes.
A normal week.
I'm going to assume that was an artistic,
yes,
performance
/ Magaluf 1998.
A book by another female scientist is now, thanks to a crowdfunding campaign, going to be sent to every mixed secondary school in Britain. It's called Inferior by Angela Saini, and it challenges the notion that there are major differences in the male and female brain. And these include spatial awareness, the ability to multitask, aggression, all the things that I think a lot of us have assumed maybe the male brain is more prone to some and the female brain might be better at others. But the campaign to raise enough money to buy a copy for every school is the work of an amazing, I think, British physicist called Dr. Jessica Wade, who also spends her spare time writing Wikipedia pages just to raise the profile of female scientists that have otherwise passed over. So good for her.
I think she does remarkable work, doesn't she? I love her for doing the Wikipedia thing. So I think the conditioning thing, I went to an all-girls school, and it was not the case that the slightly more masculine girls did chemistry, physics and any science. You know, the science classes were full because we were all girls together. And, you know, people didn't not go to a science class because they were women. So, of course, I think it's...
Do you think if you'd been in a mixed school and most of the... or the majority of the students had been male, would that put some girls off from doing those subjects? Is that how it
happens?
Well,
it clearly has, because the statistics would absolutely bear that out.
I went to a girls' comp. I'm sending my daughter to a girls' school deliberately so that you don't have a situation where the boy does the experiment and the girl writes it up in really neat handwriting.
I fall into lots of stereotypes because I can't parallel park and used to stop passing strangers going up the road where I lived and get them to park for me because I can't park in a small space. I just can't do that. And I just kind of generally think, but then, no, there are some women that can do that, I'm sure. So
did you
I suppose
ask
I assume
men?
If I can't do it, no woman can.
Did you just ask men to do the parallel park?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Shame
and I'll tell you another thing. At the time, I used to smoke, and I used to specifically stop people that were smoking so I could also bum a fag off them.
I definitely think it's a nature... It's not nature, it's nurture. So, for example, I never found it weird because my mum does all the DIY in our house. I thought it was odd when I saw men do it. But then my mum does all the cooking, and then I realised... If anyone here has a Northern Irish mother, you will realise that they just do everything. So what happened was, I've got two brothers and a sister, and my mother spent the whole of our teenage years going, no, 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 I'll do that. No, 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 sit down. No, I'll do that. I'll do that. I'll do that. I'll do that. No, you have a wee sit down. I'll do that. So what happened was, she raised four great people who had no life skills whatsoever.
It's time now to remember those people, and indeed animals, who have made the headlines this week, but who will now fade back into obscurity. This is a tribute to them for the contribution they've made to the news. So let's remember Jessie the parrot, who escaped from her London home and spent 3 days on a roof. Firefighters were called and instructed to try and coax Jessie to come to them with the words, "I love you." But when one firefighter tried that, the parrot responded vigorously with the words, "F off." She then flew into a nearby tree and was eventually rescued by the RSPCA. Also brightening up the news, 26-year-old Thomas Murphy Hankin, who was stopped by police in Norwich and arrested for walking a piglet that wasn't on a lead. The pigs, and I'm referring to the animal, not being offensive about Norwich police, the pigs... now in the care of the RSPCA, where a parrot called Jessie keeps telling him to... Well, anyway, let's move on. In Nebraska, police reported a chilling confrontation with a man who was behaving erratically and, worse, had taken a hostage. The deputy attending the scene described the hostage as a small frog. The motorist was reportedly throwing rubbish at the deputy and shouting at him whilst refusing to release the frog. Police say drugs may have played a part in the incident. Thanks to all those people, we probably won't remember you. Now, looking back over this series, I've realised that I haven't quite achieved a balanced range of views when it comes to Brexit. So, Julia, to redress that balance... You're going to have to work quite hard here. You need to speak uninterruptedly. I mean, I'm only going to let her do it for a minute, don't worry. But about what a brilliant idea Brexit is.
Well,
go.
I'm just reassured that I'm in front of a London audience. I'm clearly the only Brexiteer in the village. And I haven't yet been tarred and feathered or burnt as a witch. So that's encouraging. I think it shows the country's coming together. It's going to be just fine. I don't know how else to put this. It's really simple. It's about democracy. It's just about whether or not you think that the British people are better at running the British state than anyone else in the rest of Europe, and certainly Jean-Claude Juncker and his drinks cabinet, either before or after lunch. And it seems to me that countries always thrive when they have proper democratic accountability. That's all I want. And the day I can boot out Jean-Claude Juncker or Michel Barnier or any of the others in Brussels, then that will be fine. But we can't. So until that day, I'm afraid, Brexit here till I die.
Well, I think that's done a fairly good job. No applause. OK.
But no booing, so that's a start.
No. Now, also, we haven't finished yet because...
Come the revolution when you're all... March the 30th next year, there's going to be re-education camps for the lot of you. John Redwood will be leading those camps.
Oh.
That's my birthday.
I mean, suddenly... we...
Not anymore. It's year zero.
Yes,
Bryony, if ever you were going to spend a period of 7 days in a state of intoxication, it's around then, isn't it? Starting early, you know, towards the end of March, get stuck in. Now, also in the interest of balance, Julia's done her bit. Each of the rest of you have got to come up with one thing that's positive about Brexit. Just one. Give it a try.
So I went to Iceland on holiday. Country, not the super freeze place. They're outside of the EU and their safety is just non-existent. And in all honesty, I enjoyed it. So we walked around volcanoes and down to craters. There were no handrails, Jo. And it was exciting. Yes. You had to concentrate. So I am very much looking forward to no handrails, metaphorical and physical. Yeah, no, I'd like that feeling that you actually just have to slightly look out for yourself.
Oh, so like... Do you buy things from the supermarket and then you eat them after the best before dinner?
Very much so. Yeah. I could go at any moment, love.
So, when we leave the EU, we could slash the 5% VAT rate on sanitary products so we can get rid of the tampon tax. We can enforce that. Because at the moment, according to EU law, like under the jurisdiction, tampons and sanitary products are luxury items, which I find fascinating because if they're luxury items, why don't I see more of them in rap videos?
Surely the best thing about Brexit happening, well, even if the only thing for a lot of people in this audience will be that we can stop talking about Brexit.
Yes. Yeah. Although I suspect that, you know, the ongoing situation might give us something to talk about.
Well, I mean, the plagues of locusts might be a problem, yeah.
Life will not be dull unless you're stuck in one of those tailbacks outside Dover. No comedy show would be complete without a reference to the latest findings of the Economist Intelligence Unit's annual survey. This is a survey which looks at 140 cities around the world and decides, based on a number of very dull factors, which is the most livable in. And this year's top of the table came Vienna, which I hated when I went there. There seemed to be quite a few skinheads with dogs, and I nearly got run over by a tram. Manchester, Katie, was highest in the UK of all UK cities, only came 35th, but 13 places ahead of London. So we're going to round off the show with a quick fire quiz all about UK cities, okay? Fingers on where the buzzers would be if we had any. Here we go. In 1967, Norwich became the first city to do what to one of its streets?
Pedestrianise it.
Correct.
Here,
does that make you maybe want to live there?
Look how excited you got about roads. Look how much you were.
Don't start them on bins.
Here we go. It's quick fire. Oh, what's the connection between Birmingham and the Lord of the Rings?
Bullring.
Tolkien.
Oh, okay, because that makes more sense.
Because he was born there. I think Birmingham was the inspiration for Rivendell. Now, it was also the first city in Britain where an elephant was dissected, but that's by the by. James Chalmers was born in Dundee. Which everyday object did he invent? No, not the cake. No. Clue, it can be stuck onto something. Stamp. Adhesive postage stamp. Yeah, invented in Dundee. Staying with connections, what's the connection between Sooty and Sweep and Leeds' famous fish and chip shop, Harry Ramsden's? More specifically, Harry Corbett.
Can I just say that I had Sooty and Sweep on my radio show the other day. I kid you not.
I don't
ask why, it's a long story. Okay. It would transpire, things you discover a few minutes into a live radio interview. Sooty doesn't make a sound. Just a little lesson for anyone looking at a radio presenter. Sweep does. Sooty, remarkably sassy.
Yeah, Sweep is also...
Can't shut
Sweep
up.
Real weird views on Brexit. Sweep. Tell you what,
that is fantastic, having a mute puppet on a radio show.
Award-winning radio.
Award-winning. The connection was the creator of Sooty and Sweep, Harry Corbett, was Harry Ramsden's nephew. Right. That's all we've got time for on the quiz. The audience
we
far and away the winners.
Oh, yes. Well
brings us to the end of the show. So thanks so much for listening over the past few weeks, and a big thank you to my guests, Julia Hartley-Brewer, Bryony Kimmings, Katie Mulgrew, and Fee Glover. Goodbye.